you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
I'm Tracy Thomas, host of One for the Books, a live literary event series from LAist. We are back with guests, author Amanda Montell, and actor Bella Lavelle. You can find us on May 15th at the Crawford Family Forum. Tickets at laist.com/events.
Hey, I'm Antonia Cerejido, and you're listening to Imperfect Paradise, a show about hidden worlds and messy realities. We are bringing you our latest LAist Investigates, a single episode deep dive into an investigation out of our LAist newsroom. Today, a messy story about abortion access here in California, the biggest blue state. On a sunny day in November 2023, LAist senior health reporter Jackie Fortier met up with Deanna Gomez at a park in Rancho Cucamonga.
How long do I have you for?
Like hour and a half.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Lots of time.
Deanna is 25. She has dark hair about shoulder length. She has long acrylic nails. I think they were French tip, and she speaks a lot with her hands. So if you listen like really carefully to the audio, you can hear it kind of click a little bit. She's really vivacious.
You look a lot younger than I anticipated.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought we were like the same age until you said you graduated from 2009.
No, I'm 36.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, you age beautifully.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Deanna wanted to study to become a teacher or an educator of some kind. She enrolled at Cal State San Bernardino in 2022. It's one of 23 schools in the California State University, or CSU, system, the largest public university system in the country. Most CSUs, including Cal State San Bernardino, are what's called Hispanic-serving institutions, colleges or universities, where 25% of undergraduates are Latino and at least half of the students are low-income. Cal State San Bernardino is the kind of university that attracts students who are focused on getting their diploma and getting out.
I think within the Cal State and University of California systems, they're not selling that campus based on the amenities. You're not going to have a climbing wall. There's no lazy river. You can go and you can get a degree and you're, you know, going to be equipped to get a job. And that's what these students, I think, are looking for. At least Deanna was.
Still, Cal State San Bernardino does show off the amenities they do have. Deanna remembers her orientation day. She was toured around San Bernardino's campus with its brutalist architecture.
During, like, orientation, like, they only showed you, like, the new CGI building. Dude, I'm a sociology major. I don't care. They showed you a cool place to study, a cool place to hang out.
Looking back, Deanna feels that the tour focused on the flashy stuff and left out some of the things that would be most useful to students, like basic healthcare services.
I didn't even know we had a clinic. They just didn't mention it for some reason, and orientation was, like, all day long.
As Deanna's college experience went on, there would be more information that she wished that she had been told. Information that could have drastically altered her college experience. Altered her life.
Did anyone at any point say anything about you being able to get a medication abortion on campus?
No. No.
When Roe v. Wade was overturned in June 2022, many universities across the country in states like New York and Massachusetts were scrambling to figure out how to guarantee access to medication abortions on their campuses.
Higher education institutions are figuring out how to try to serve students, how to try to serve their communities in a post-Roe world.
In January of 2023, California became the first state where it became law. All publicly funded universities were mandated to offer medication abortion on their campuses. Nearly a million students attend California's public universities.
In a matter of months, medication abortions will be available to students attending state-funded universities here in California.
But a year after the law went into effect, LAist senior health reporter Jackie Fortier and higher education correspondent Adolfo Guzman Lopez found that many of these basic universities have done little, if anything, to notify students about this newly mandated abortion access, not even listing it on their clinic's website.
Students have told me, well, if I didn't know about it, that to me says that my university doesn't want me to know about it.
The single largest reason women drop out from college is pregnancy. California's law was designed to remove that hurdle for students. In this LAist Investigates episode, we'll explore why thousands of students who were supposed to benefit from this law are still in the dark about on-campus abortion access. When Jackie Fortier met Deanna Gomez, Deanna was in the middle of her senior year at Cal State San Bernardino.
Deanna had two jobs. She worked in retail, and then she also worked part-time at a private Catholic school.
Deanna was working to pay her way through school. Combined, Deanna's jobs took up a lot of her time each week.
Anywhere between like 50 to 60 hours, probably.
With a full class load?
Yeah, six classes. My first semester took nine.
She was pretty inventive with how she could get everything done.
What I started to do, which saved me a lot of time, was like recording my essays or whatever into Google Docs instead of typing it. So if I was like driving to work, I just would click it and like it would just start flowing my thoughts.
She would also do it on her lunch breaks so that she could then kind of go back and edit it and get her papers done.
That's how I kind of make it work, because I don't really have any days off. And I don't really eat that often either. I forget sometimes. You know, you're just busy, busy, busy.
Deanna found out she was pregnant in September of 2023.
And in September, I was like 5 weeks, barely.
It just completely disrupted the entire flow that she had in order to keep her head above water. She thought she had taken correct precautions. She was on birth control. She thought worked 100% of the time. So she was in shock. I mean, that's a huge decision.
I love children. I want children. But I grew up poor. I grew up in poverty. I grew up in a two-bedroom apartment with six family members. That's not something that's fun when you see all your friends having their own rooms and things like that. I don't want that for my children, like, ever. I want to be financially stable, which is why I put myself through school, which is why I put myself through debt, so I can, you know, one day provide financially and do things that I want to do.
When you decided that you were going to get an abortion, where did you look for information?
Obviously, I went to Google, because that's what everyone does, you know. It's your best friend if you don't know what to do or who to talk to. And then I also remembered hearing, like, Planned Parenthood and high school, they mentioned like, oh yeah, you just like walk in, get, you know, the pill, easy. So I was like, you know what, this is what we'll do.
Deanna did a Google search for the closest Planned Parenthood. It was in Upland, about 25 miles east of San Bernardino.
She drove to Upland.
I went to Upland first after work one day.
Half an hour there.
I was like, oh, like, do you guys do abortions? And they're just like, yeah, well, you need an appointment. And we don't have any right now anyways.
An hour and a half back.
And so I went to Pasadena.
An hour and a half there.
I drove on Monday where it didn't work. And I didn't get paid for that holiday either.
An hour and a half back. Some of her professors were not supportive. They said, we have to have a doctor's note from you. She had to drive back out to Pasadena.
An hour and a half there.
To get a doctor's note.
An hour and a half back.
But in order to stay in school, she did it. She ended up driving more than 300 miles to three different Planned Parenthood locations in order to get the care that she needed.
It felt like just kind of like this out-of-body experience. Like, is this really happening to me? Like, you know, like, is this what I'm doing right now? Is this the right choice? Because, you know, they ask you, are you sure? Are you sure? I'm just like, am I sure? I got my first appointment October 9th.
Medication abortion is actually two medications. The first pill is mifepristone. That's what she took at the doctor's office. It dissolves in your mouth.
It was a lot more than I had anticipated. Like, I took that one medication that day, and then they gave you pills for nausea, and then you had to take the four pills, which is what solidifies the abortion, and you put those like on the inside of your cheeks and they dissolve like 30 minutes and those taste nasty and they tell you you're gonna want to vomit, but you can't because then it's not gonna work. I didn't really feel anything. It kind of felt like slight cramping, but it wasn't like anything I couldn't handle. My job's not gonna be fine if I'm telling them what I'm doing, you know, even with a doctor's note. like, they're probably going to judge me because it's a religious school. And so I went to work the next day and I had to take those 4 pills at a certain time.
She took that the next day as required on her lunch break at the school that she worked at.
One of my superiors saw me and she's like, "Are you okay?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm fine." But it was because, like, they did taste nasty. They make you want to throw up, and like the tightening of like the jaw, and like you feel all that. I'm like, "Oh my God." But I obviously wanted it to be successful, so I kept them in for the whole 30 minutes like I was supposed to, and, you know, they were gone. I was trying to keep up as much as I could, but it's really hard.
Deanna started to slip behind on her schoolwork.
I attended 1 or 2 classes, but I literally missed, like, probably all of October, and that really put me behind.
Did you work the whole time?
I did. Yeah, I worked both jobs my whole time.
She continued to feel nauseated. The two medications worked together to empty the uterus. She had cramping and bleeding, but, you know, she'd never done this before. She had no idea. She thought, okay, it probably worked.
That's when I had, like, a lot more cramping afterwards in the next couple days. And I was like, "Dude, like, this feels rough." And I was asking my friend, like, "Did you feel like this?" And they're like, "Kind of, but not like that." And I was like, "This doesn't really seem right."
They always schedule a follow-up to make sure that it did work.
I think it was like a week before my birthday, too. So I was like still 24 at this time.
So at her checkup a month later,
I went and they did like the ultrasound. She's like, "Unfortunately, you know, it wasn't successful." I started crying because I was emotional. I was like, "Okay, now what do I do?"
It was such overwhelming news that Deanna clicked into problem-solving mode.
And you need to think about it fast, because once you finish basically the first trimester, it gets a little bit harder. And at that time, I think it was about 8 or 9 weeks when they said it didn't work. The first thing that came to my mind was like, "Okay, well, how much is the second time going to be?"
By this point, Deanna had already spent $600 trying to get an abortion.
I remember calling my partner and we were talking about the options that the doctor had gave me, doing the pills again, but I would still run into the chance of it not working, or I could do the DNC.
So a DNC is a dilation and cuterage. It's an outpatient procedure. Basically, they scrape out your uterus. It's almost guaranteed to work because you're removing the pregnancy tissue.
We just, you know, figured the DNC would be the best option, but they couldn't do it at Pasadena because they only do it on certain days. So I was like, "Okay, well, what's my other choice?" And they're like, "Well, if we want to get it before, like, you know, the 11 weeks, you would have to go to Baldwin Park."
So she had to go to another, this is now the third Planned Parenthood. It was part of her continuing care, so she didn't have to pay any more money for it. But, you know, it's another day, it's another trip. Gas is extremely expensive. She drives a big truck. Meanwhile, she's having to carve out time to do all of this within her very regimented schedule because she needs to make enough money to pay for school and do all of her homework.
So I went to Baldwin Park and I started to get, like, very scared because they were talking to me about, like, how the process would work and what you're going to experience, what it's like, this and that. It was really uncomfortable, though, this, like, loud, like, vacuuming sound, and then you're kind of just thinking, like, you know, what's happening.
Deanna's DNC abortion was successful in terminating her pregnancy. She thought an acutely stressful chapter of her life was finally over. Hundreds of dollars, hours of frantic driving, stressful appointments, procedures, and missed school days. All of this could have been avoided if Deanna had known about California's law to provide medication abortion access on public campuses.
If I had known that, like, I would have taken advantage of it. This is something that's free, as opposed to paying, like, almost $600 out of pocket for it.
Deanna is the very kind of student that this law was designed to benefit, and yet she had no idea it existed.
It really shows that they're not for the students, especially if they're not going to go out of their way to publicize it or advocate it in general.
When we come back, how did this happen? How did the implementation of this law fail Deanna and thousands of other students across California? and later how Deanna's struggle to get an abortion could threaten the goal she's working so hard to accomplish. We'll hear more from senior health reporter Jackie Fortier, and Elias Adolfo Guzman Lopez will also join us about their joint investigation into this story. Stay with us. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/paradise, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/paradise now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/paradise.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.
Welcome back to Imperfect Paradise. I'm Antonia Cerejido. Before the break, LAS senior health reporter Jackie Fortier told us about Deanna Gomez. Deanna was a student at Cal State San Bernardino. She paid hundreds of dollars and missed nearly a month of school figuring out how to get an abortion. All the while, she could have gotten it for free on her campus if she had known it was legally mandated that it be available to her. LAS higher education correspondent Adolfo Guzman Lopez reported this story alongside Jackie Fortier, and together they looked into how and why this California law providing access to abortion for students at public colleges and universities hasn't been made aware to many students and faculty, including those who could have benefited, like Deanna. Hi, Adolfo.
Hi, Antonia.
Thanks for joining me.
During our reporting, we heard from Connie Leyva, the then state senator who authored this law.
According to the former state senator, California's abortion access law began with a group of students.
In 2017, UC Berkeley students came to us and said that they had thousands of signatures on a petition to require medicated abortion be offered at their student health center. UC Berkeley denied the petition, so the student government came to our team and asked if we would introduce a bill that would require all UCs and CSUs to provide medicated abortion on campus. At the time, before Roe v. Wade was overturned, just because you had a right, if you didn't have access to that right, then you were really actually being denied that right. You know, and we just want to make sure that women had access to whatever they needed for reproductive rights.
We mentioned earlier that pregnancy is the biggest reason women drop out of college. This is the problem the bill was designed to solve.
Just about a year before the law was passed, there was some research done that showed that each month, hundreds of students on UC and Cal State campuses were getting medication abortions, and that sometimes led them to drop out. In providing medication abortion, they're helping to remove that hurdle.
Leyva and her colleagues wrote up the bill and started trying to get buy-in from the universities. But from the get-go, the proposed bill was divisive.
As you can imagine, this was a very controversial issue. It was very controversial with the colleges. Chancellor's offices had a lot of questions. Many of the student health centers weren't even prepared to offer medicated abortion because you do have to do it within the first 10 weeks of pregnancy. That requires that you have a sonogram done to determine where you are in your pregnancy. So we had to make sure that each health center had the money they needed.
The bill would pass through the California Senate and Assembly, but was vetoed by then-Governor Jerry Brown in 2018. The lawmakers went back to the drawing board to address concerns.
As it was being discussed, as it was being written, there was a strong feeling by some campuses that there were going to be protests on their campuses against medication abortion and abortion in general.
The CSUs and UCs were afraid that they were going to have picketing on campus, that people were going to be out in front of the clinics, that there could be a problem with the medication abortion, that they could be sued for that.
That led to a request by some of them to allow the money to be used for facilities, added security cameras, panic buttons, for example.
Leyva and her colleagues secured over $10 million in private grant funding to address those concerns, and universities got on board. In 2019, the bill was passed, and it went into effect in 2023. When Adolfo first started hearing about students and university staff not knowing about this law in April of 2023, he reached out to his colleague, senior health reporter Jackie Fortier, to look into the story together. And they both started reaching out to universities directly.
So I called all 33 campus clinics in the state of California. I didn't pretend to be a student. I just said, hi, I wanted to know if you offer medication abortion. That was my question. I got a wide variety of responses. Some of them were very helpful, really wanted to get me anything I needed, answer any questions, like connect me with counseling. Most of them, it was, you want what? Why? I don't know if we offer that. You know what? Let me check.
Whoa, really?
It was very off-putting, to put it mildly. At one university, I actually got yelled at over the phone.
Jackie got mixed results, but she and Adolfo knew that university students these days might not be calling people to get their information.
We know that people today, and in particular, younger people, get their information online, mm-hmm. right? If you have a doubt about something, if you want to find something out, you Google it. Well, when we did Google the name of a particular campus and medication abortion, nothing came up from any campuses.
It seems like outreach was the part of the rollout that was least thought through when the law passed.
Campuses were provided $200,000 to both do training and outreach and buy equipment. We weren't very clear on how that money was used for outreach. And as a matter of fact, we didn't find too many examples of campuses using that money to create awareness campaigns, for example.
Mm-hmm.
As we started talking to people on campus, both faculty members and some students, we kept hearing, I didn't know about this.
Mm.
Really? This is happening? This is being provided by my campus? I didn't know. I wish I would have known.
Did you see any sort of trend between what sorts of universities were better at offering this information versus those that were less effective?
What we did find is different levels of engagement with health issues, reproductive health issues at different universities. At a Research One university, which is what UCLA is called, you know, very high level of research, you have public health researchers studying this and you've got graduate students interested in this. That microcosm of people interested in reproductive health is very sophisticated at a place like UCLA. At smaller universities, maybe like a Cal State San Bernardino,
mm-hmm.
that is not as well funded, that doesn't have, you know, a public health type of program, you don't have those discussions and you don't have people communicating back and forth and saying, hey, we need to do this. How are we going to do this?
Yeah. What's coming up for me right now is thinking about how Deanna talked a lot about how for her, like San Bernardino was a place that was supposed to help students like her who have to work a part-time job. And it seems like, you know, in the list of things that get brought up as problems, like having more access to resources, higher tech equipment, better buildings, etc. Like this is another way in which a gap in quality of education comes up.
Exactly.
I think one of the questions that I have is this something that the universities were hiding or was this like a bureaucratic oversight?
I've heard the suspicion students have told me, well, if I didn't know about it, that to me says that my university doesn't want me to know about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard that. Connie Leyva, the then state senator who authored this law, she said that it was very remarkable that this law passed to begin with.
Former Senator Leyva thinks that the breakdown in awareness around this law comes down to each individual college or university.
She suggested this element of promoting it, informing students and everybody on campus that this was available, that was going to be left up to the universities and the leadership there.
And that room for discretion is where the inconsistencies come from. Here's Connie Leyva again.
I think that there's still so much stigma around abortion. Universities were afraid to list it and are afraid that people might be judgmental or they might come and picket at their campus, which I think is too bad. Until we make this a normal part of women's reproductive health, I think those stigmas are still going to be out there.
When Jackie, LA's senior health reporter, spoke to Beth Jaworski, the clinic director at Cal State San Bernardino, Deanna Gomez's school, the director didn't seem to view awareness of the law as an urgent issue.
We need to work harder if there is a student who needed the service and wasn't aware that they could access it through us and not have to pay for it. But it's one student. We haven't been providing the service very long. It's been just about a year now.
Before their meetup in the park, Jackie first spoke to Deanna on the phone around a month earlier. Deanna was driving her white pickup truck, as always fitting something in between her work and classes. Towards the end of their call, Deanna revealed to Jackie she was facing another big problem because of all the challenges she faced to get an abortion.
Deanna didn't know if she was going to be able to graduate or not. She missed almost all of her classes in the month of October. She wasn't sure if she was going to pass a class, and if she didn't pass that class, she wasn't going to graduate.
They're just like, you still need to get this done by this time. Like, no extensions, no nothing.
That's coming up. And we learn what happens when Adolfo and Jackie's reporting becomes public. Stay with us. As a farmer's son from a desert region in California, J.B. Hamby thinks a lot about water.
I spent a lot of time digging up history, particularly about water, which is the origins of the Imperial Valley.
How this 28-year-old became the youngest lead negotiator on the Colorado River ever, and how he could shape the most consequential negotiations to date. Listen to Imperfect Paradise, the Gen Z water dealmaker, wherever you get podcasts.
Hi, I'm Tracy Thomas, host of One for the Books, and we are back for another round.
This is clearly an NPR audience.
Yeah, I think they're so smart. What the hell?
My guests this time are actor Vella Lavelle and author Amanda Montell, whose new book, The Age of Magical Overthinking, is out now. Join us on May 15th at the Crawford Family Forum for book talk, trivia, and hot takes. Tickets can be found at laist.com/events.
Welcome back. I'm Antonia Cerejido, and you're listening to Imperfect Paradise. LAist higher education correspondent Adolfo Guzman Lopez and senior health reporter Jackie Fortier released their investigation into the lack of awareness about abortion access on California public university campuses at the beginning of this year. So your reporting came out in late January. We are recording this in March. What has happened since?
So since our reporting has come out, universities have been putting this information on their websites. So several universities that didn't have the information, UC Santa Cruz, Cal State San Bernardino, where Deanna Gomez attended, put it on their website. There's also been talk from Cal State Northridge Women's Center. Mm-hmm. After reading our report, after seeing what was happening at other universities, the Women's Center is now going to create an awareness campaign about medication abortion that's going to use students themselves to get the word out, to create postings on Instagram, which is one of the ways that they say is the most effective to get information out. There are some stragglers. UC Merced does not have it on its website, and there are a couple of other campuses that still don't have it on their website.
Aside from UC Merced, other stragglers include Chico, Fresno, and San Diego State, Cal State University's East Bay and Monterey Bay, and the California Maritime Academy. There are nearly a million students in California's public universities. As we noted earlier, it's the biggest network of public universities in the country. We don't know how many of those students are aware or not that medication abortion access is available to them on campus, or whether even searching online would lead them there.
It made me think how over time, especially over the, you know, maybe 20 years I've been looking at different aspects of education and that sort of thing. I remember how in the early 2000s in public schools in LA Unified, it was controversial for high schools to have condoms in the nurse's office, right? And how, you know, talking about birth control was a very controversial thing in public settings. So I'm wondering to what extent we still find ourselves in that sort of situation where, you know, something like abortion rights and a woman's right to choose is still a very controversial topic, but will change over time.
Former Senator Leyva also believes that opinions over access to abortion will change. But she worries it may become more controversial.
I think that now this bill, this law, is more important than ever to make sure that women and students especially have access to medicated abortion. But, you know, we live in troubling times here in the United States. We're lucky in California. We did pass a bill, and it was ultimately put on the ballot for voters to vote on to enshrine a woman's right to choose, a woman's right to have an abortion, because things can change very quickly in an election.
When LAist senior health reporter Jackie Fortier met Deanna Gomez in Rancho Cucamonga, they had been talking for a month. During that month, Deanna was frantically trying to balance her two jobs and make up her college coursework she had missed out on while she was figuring out how to get an abortion.
I walk tomorrow. I just submitted my last final yesterday, so.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great.
Yeah.
You managed to graduate.
Luckily. And the only reason why I did is because I communicated with my professors who were really understanding. I did like one professor at a time because I was really scared of like any like just negative backlash, because you don't know what people are thinking. You don't know what side people are on.
So if you had known that you could have gone to the campus clinic and gotten a free medication abortion, how would that have changed your experience?
If I had known that, like, I would have taken advantage of it. This is something that's free, as opposed to paying like almost $600 out of pocket for it.
How do you feel about CSU San Bernardino now, knowing that they chose not to spend any of the grant money that they have to communicate that they have this service? They don't have it on the website.
Yeah.
I don't know, does that make you feel differently about CSUSB?
It does. I just think it really painted them in like a really horrible picture, because they focus on like being a school for minorities and this and that. And it's just like, how are you gonna identify that you are for the minorities, but you're not gonna give them things that are accessible to them? You're gonna make them go out of their way and pay out of pocket for it. Why are you not gonna advocate? Why aren't you gonna, you know, publicize it like you do everything else? Like, you want to publicize like just random things like coffee with the dean and making friendship bracelets. Like, I don't really need friends. I need something that's actual of service to me. Like, I was fortunate enough that I had the money to do it, but would I have liked to have done it for free at a school that I'm paying for out of pocket? Absolutely. How many Hispanics had to drop out because they couldn't continue college because they got pregnant?
Dina agreed to be interviewed for the story because she wants other students to know about the opportunity she didn't get. This law was made because students advocated for it. And students, like Deanna, are continuing to advocate.
What are you going to do to make it right? Not even for like now, like past students like me, but for future students as well.
Thanks to LAS senior health reporter Jackie Fortier and higher education correspondent Adolfo Guzman Lopez for sharing the reporting with us. You can learn more about abortion access at California's public universities at las.com, and we'll include a link in the show notes. Next week on Imperfect Paradise, a very special redrop of The Forgotten Revolutionary from our 2022 season, an investigation into the mysterious death of Chicano student activist Oscar Gomez.
He was fire. He was charisma incarnate.
Yeah, he would have been someone that could walk alongside Cesar Chavez, you know.
There needs to be some rest. There needs to be some closure.
What happened to Oscar? That's next week on Imperfect Paradise. I'm the show's host, Antonia Cerejido. This episode was written and produced by me and Evan Jacoby. Reporting by Jackie Fortier and Adolfo Guzman Lopez. Catherine Mailhouse is the executive producer of the show, and Shayna Naomi Crockmull is our vice president of podcasts. Additional editing from Ross Brenneman and Dana Littlefield. Mixing by our engineer E. Scott Kelly and Evan Jacoby. Additional engineering by Donald Paz. Jens Campbell is our production coordinator. The Imperfect Paradise team includes Emily Guerin, Natalie Chudnovsky, and Emma Alabaster. Support for this podcast is made possible by Gordon and Donna Crawford, who believe that quality journalism makes Los Angeles a better place to live.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Start your Saturday with something that will grow your kiddos' brains and get their creative juices flowing. Join us at LAS for a morning of multilingual story times, interactive performances, art making, and lots of kid fun. Bring the whole fam and join us for a super fun Saturday at LAS in Pasadena on June 1st. Tickets at las.com/events. See you there.